mind power will rebring you guests from all over the world. And I'm so delighted that you're going to be able to share this hour with me, because we're going to be talking about something very special. And I know it's going to be of tremendous interest to you. I learned a lot. We're talking about today ginseng, the divine root. Before we go to my guest, David Taylor, I want to let you know that we're going to have our phone lines open in about a half hour or so. So write this telephone number down, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. David Taylor, as I said, is my guest today. Ginseng, the divine root, has been a passion of his for more than one reason. And he goes into this wonderful aspect of history of the plant that today has so many magical qualities, according to so many ads that we hear and various personalities and individuals that have linked their names with this root that has been around, well, as far back as mankind can remember. David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, where are you located, David?
I'm just outside of Washington, D.C. in Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, that is such a gorgeous, gorgeous area, Alexandria, Virginia. You have been writing for a number of publications, the Smithsonian, the Washington Post, the Christian Science Monitor, Wired. You have done documentary work for Discovery Channel and PBS and also for National Geographic. I'm so intrigued as to all of this information that you acquired regarding the ginseng root. Now, when you look at it, it looks like somebody's worst nightmare. You could take and make a science fiction creature out of the way that this thing looks.
It's true.
I mean, I've got a photo of this in front of me, and I'm just absolutely amazed with this. It is a $65 billion per year alternative medicine market, and gracious, are there enough of these to go around? $65 billion?
Well, that is the total alternative herbal medicine market. So ginseng is a part of that, but one of the largest parts as far as a single plant goes. Yeah, ginseng has been around, as you say, for thousands of years, and through time, through that familiarity, has become one of the best-known medicinal herbs around.
Now, there's a difference between ginseng roots. And for me, as a novice relative to this, this was quite educational. And I was surprised to find that here in America, we have our own ginseng root that is highly prized by the Asians. Why? How did you, whatever got you interested in the ginseng root to begin with?
Well, Donna, it's a fascinating story. I, like you, for years thought of ginseng as an Asian plant, because it had been used in Chinese medicine and
mm-hmm.
Korean medicine for thousands of years. But it turns out that ginseng was a forest plant in the forest that covered the northern hemisphere. So millions of years before continental drift, ginseng was native to both sides of what grew to be the Pacific Ocean. So there's both American ginseng and there's Asian ginseng. And they are the two main species of this plant, and it was used medicinally on both sides of the Pacific. Native American groups came to use the plant for stomach and eye ailments, and this was at the same time that on the across the ocean, Chinese and Korean physicians were using Asian ginseng as a tonic. And so it is just an amazing example of a plant that's native to two very different parts of the world.
Now, what are the most prolific areas in the United States for the ginseng? And it is really hard to find, isn't it? You really have to know what you're looking for.
That's right. Pretty much everybody I talked to about the plant would talk about it as very different from other plants. It seemed unpredictable because it could blend in with other plants like poison oak, This is in its native forests, in the, mostly in the eastern half of North America. And it looks like just a small herb, a small weed often, and so people could walk right by it and not know it was something special. So you had to be almost trained by someone, an elder in your family or somebody who knew the plant before you could sort of know where to find it. It's also grown on farms now, though, in places throughout the world, and in the Pacific Northwest, there's a large ginseng growing community.
Wow, how, that's amazing. Now, the Iroquois Indians used this quite a bit. How did the Iroquois use it?
They used it. It was fascinating to me to visit the Mohawk part of the Iroquois Confederation and to talk with people there about how it had been used in their medicinal system. And it was both part of use with other plants and also as a kind of a thanks to the natural world. So it would be, there was a whole Thanksgiving address in which medicinal plants was, including ginseng, were an important part. And it would often be used for stomach and eye ailments, but also for more cosmological imbalances as well.
You have, just about on every page, fascinating information about this root. And one of the points of information that I found intriguing is that the Cherokees used what's called the Jeffersonia decilia, a smaller found in forests from Ontario down to North Carolina. They used it as a poultice for sores and inflammations. The Iroquois boiled plant to treat diarrhea. And the Asian relative to that same plant, and like you said, there was this connection for so
right.
many millions of years before the split, the Jeffersonia dubia became the folk cure for stomach problems in northern China and Korea. I mean, it must have taken you forever just to try to get all this together, because your book is so very, very insightful and informative. And to think that we can grow this ginseng in the America. When did it start becoming the hot buzzword here in the U.S.? What was it, about 10 years ago?
Well, that's another interesting thing, that it has gone through waves of popularity and then almost like amnesia, because, as you mentioned, the use here in the U.S. and North America goes back basically 300 years to when it was really discovered by the Jesuit missionaries to be the same, virtually the same plant as the Asian ginseng variety, and so they realized that was a great trade potential for shipping to the Far East. So ginseng became one of the first main exports from North America to China, and so that raised its profile and popularity quite a bit. For most of the 1800s, it was used medicinally in the U.S. as well. It was part of the U.S. pharmacopoeia, kind of the official kind of pharmacy of the U.S. But then in the 1900s, it kind of faded from use for most of the century, and it wasn't until, as you say, 10 years ago that people started to think, well, maybe we do have something to learn from Eastern medicine that we can adapt and take a look at their experience and see how that can be useful to us.
I love the description of the personality of the ginseng plant, because it's called the tiger of the plant world. However, it is so unusual. People that are really familiar with the ginseng plant, it's said that if you're going to have bad weather, it goes dormant. It's as if it has an intelligence that says, well, only if it's a good year am I going to come out and show myself. And those that are trying to harvest it will be so much aware of the character of this plant that it actually can go dormant. It can stay in some kind of a suspended animation. Who would have a clue about this with a root?
It's true, and because it's it's so unusual. It fascinates people who otherwise are very logical and sort of can just only by the most hard facts are ruled. This was a CPA who was the one you mentioned who had said that he had noticed that sometimes the weather, the climate, can signal to ginseng roots on his ginseng farm in Wisconsin whether to go up or not. But people would notice that sometimes the root would put up a shoot for a season, and sometimes it would just stay underground and not for several years at a time, not go up. And that was part of the fascination for a lot of people who collect it in the wild, and for even those who farm it, is that this plant is unusual. It's unlike other plants, and often they would talk about it more like wildlife than they would a plant.
Well, one of the experiences that someone had, which, again, this sounds like something out of science fiction. It sounds like something that a person would fabricate, but they're not. The digger who was walking across a pasture, and right in the middle of the field, he finds this ginseng patch. And he said this was like finding a skateboarder on the eighth green of an exclusive private golf course. I mean, that is how weird this was. So he did some research.
Right.
And it just was mind-boggling.
Yes, he figured that that the forest had been there, and because that is the native habitat for ginseng, and it's very particular about the kind of shade that it requires and the soil drainage. So the forest must have been there and then been cut down, but the roots remained, and perhaps through a combination of factors, stayed in that suspended animation until the conditions were right to pop up again. That was told to me by a county extension agent, an agricultural agent in upstate New York, who, like others, was fascinated by how ginseng adapts to its habitat and how it's kind of the opposite of a weed. It will sort of hunker down into a place it likes and not try to overtake a large area, but actually just try to hold on to the particular habitat that it inhabits.
My guest today is David A. Taylor. We're talking about, if you're just tuning into the show, about ginseng, which is considered the divine root. Now, David has done extensive research, and it is absolutely fascinating reading. In a way, it's like you're reading a detective story one minute, and then the next minute you are in the scientific research. It's just incredible, and he's really given a lot of historical information. We've got recipes we're going to be sharing with you. David, I want to ask you a question relative to the Western acceptance of ginseng in the medical community. Again, I was just astonished to hear the amounts of money. It's like $20 million in 1977 to over $1 billion a year. And this is entailing herbal foods and beverages that have ginseng in it. And it could be somebody just waving the ginseng over the bottle for all we know. What did you find out relative to, you know, the Western world acceptance of this root relative to the Asian or peoples around the world that have used this for centuries? Why do you think there's such a division about the usefulness of this?
Well, that's a really interesting question, Donna, and I think there are several reasons for it. I think one of the reasons is that Western science generally starts from a skeptical focus on quantification.
Mm-hmm.
So one have so although you can test something scientifically with the empirical experience of, you know, one by one bits of data, that particularly in medicine, the quantification of a clinical trial is often crucial for medical acceptance. And so the way that clinical trials are designed, particularly in the U.S., for the past 100 years, they've focused on single chemical medicines. So really kind of isolate the idea of isolating active ingredients, whereas in Eastern medicine, much other types of medicine, it's a view of how things are linked together and how things work together towards health. So there are very different ways of looking at what makes health work and what makes medicine work. And I think because something like ginseng, it's an herb that's a complex chemical compound, so it doesn't respond easily. It's not easy to create a clinical trial that has a standardized amount of, for example, American ginseng. Even if it's the same species that you're, one species that you're testing, there's still a range of variety in each root, and so in Eastern medicine, that is one is a factor that's considered in terms of each plant's different potential and each person's different system in terms of how they respond to medicinal herbs. But in Western medicine, that's generally been anything that can't be standardized is viewed with skepticism. And so I think that approach, as much as anything, is creates a different environment. And so it's been skeptical. So I encountered, looking at Western medical professionals' view of ginseng, I saw a range from very skeptical people who had seen, you know, snake oil salesmen try to sell ginseng,
mm-hmm.
But to the range of people who were very interested in the clinical experience of Eastern medicine and making that work as a combination with Western medicine. So, for example, Dr. Mary Hardy in Los Angeles, in a Los Angeles hospital, had studied Western medicine, conventional Western medicine. In fact, she was a daughter and granddaughter of family physicians in Louisiana. But she also studied with Eastern herbalists, and so she has come to see how those can be combined, those methods. And she went to China first in the mid-80s and saw ginseng being used by traditional Chinese pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
And so she explored how that could be used in her, with her own patients. And she's developed a way of looking at ginseng as, for example, in terms of quality of life, and for the quality of life of cancer patients, for example, who are undergoing chemo treatment or radiation, ginseng's potential for reducing their fatigue is made it worth her while in testing. And her experience with that has been corroborated by recent studies that say that ginseng can help cancer patients with their quality of life and reducing the fatigue
mm-hmm.
caused by those treatments.
Now, there's the hot ginseng and the cool ginseng. And there's a physician, Dr. Tyler, that had recommendations about the use of it. What was he saying about the differences between the hot and the cold ginseng, or cool, I should say?
That's right. Well, he was noting that American ginseng and Asian ginseng have slightly different properties, and even within Chinese medicine, Asian ginseng is viewed as hot, more of a stimulant, and American ginseng is viewed as cool, kind of a more of a calmative, a way to deal with stress. And the question was, how could two closely related plants be so different in their effects? And just in the last 10 to 15 years, the chemical studies on the plant have shown that Asian ginseng and American ginseng have slightly different proportions of active ingredients that they call ginsenosides. So Asian ginseng has relatively more of the stimulant ginsenosides, and so it's hot. And American ginseng has relatively more of the sort of the calmative or stress-reducing ginsenosides, and so that's cool. And so he was pointing out a way that, in Western medical terms, we can understand what's going on in Eastern medicine with regards to ginseng. And so he said, well, if you need something to help, generally help you calm down, to reduce your stress and kind of increase your resilience, then American ginseng may be your herb of choice. If you're feeling run down or vulnerable to cold or infection or just kind of not much energy, then Asian ginseng, which is more of a stimulant, may be the herb of choice.
Now here we are today with this multi-billion dollar business that's involving ginseng, and when I was reading that information, I thought, wow, that's really something. However, ginseng in Chinese history established one of China's most powerful dynasties. And this has been something that has been part of their economic picture for thousands of years.
That's right. That was one of the most fascinating stories I found, was because I think everybody has an idea of the long use of ginseng in Chinese medicine. But I'd never heard of any story of its use as kind of a political and economic power.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the founder of the last Chinese dynasty, started as in a horse market as a ginseng trader. And he saw the economic power of ginseng, which at that time Korea sort of paid homage to the emperor in Beijing with many valuable things, including ginseng roots. And so he saw that the value of that could be used to make his nomadic group very strong. And so basically the last dynasty rose on the economic power of the ginseng monopoly, and held on to that monopoly for 300 years until the last Chinese dynasty fell in the early 1900s.
Now, you mentioned that David Law is America's largest exporter of wild ginseng, and I was surprised to find that fresh ginseng does not have the value that dried ginseng does. Why?
Well, it does vary according to the market. In certain markets, for example, I think it's more Korean markets, fresh ginseng does have great value. But particularly for Chinese markets and for shipping, dried ginseng is both more familiar and it travels better. So it's a system that has been used, a system of drying and transporting the roots that is familiar to the largest market in China. And so that is one factor in American ginseng collectors understanding how to treat the plants once they've dug them up, how to dry them and get the best money for them.
Now, in American history, and this I really got a chuckle out of, but I guess it's not a laughing matter, there's a lot of secrecy about those people that are able to farm ginseng in West Virginia. And they were very, very secretive about it because they made, let's see, you say Boone County was the third highest ginseng producing county in the state. Tell us about a little bit of the American history. I know we've got a few minutes here. And how these people, why they were so secretive about their ginseng areas.
It's really interesting. It's kind of a cultural thing because people would get very very competitive about who could find the biggest and most valuable ginseng plant. It was both economic. They could get more money for it. But it was also kind of a little competitive rivalry in a lot of communities throughout that I've visited throughout the South. I found it in North Carolina, heard about it in Kentucky and West Virginia, three of the largest producers of wild ginseng. And so people, if you had ginseng growing on your property, you did not tell anybody. You kept it quiet. You would do everything you could to keep that secret to yourself, because once the word got out, people would come onto your land and they ignored no trespassing signs, and they would dig up your plant because they knew that they could sell it for a lot of money. And yet, if someone whose plants were stolen went to the police or something like that, they wouldn't get much help in prosecuting a case like that. So there was a lot of outlaw activity in terms of where people would dig ginseng on their neighbor's land, on park land, if they could get away with it. In recent years, people have recognized that if they dig on parkland, that could endanger the plant in a lot of public spaces. But they still would dig on private land if they thought they could get away with it.
You mentioned Daniel Boone. Daniel Boone sold ginseng, not just animal pelts, but ginseng.
That's right.
You also mentioned Mark Twain. Twain's grandfather. I just love these things when they come up because it just brings fascinating links into history with people and what they did in everyday life and how they made their income. And Mark Twain's dad, they call it Sang, S-A-N-G, and he sold Sang.
That's right.
He had a general store in Tennessee.
Yes. Yeah, these little connections like that were wonderful to come across because they do show you a larger world of the history than we normally think of. It's almost like the history from the Plath perspective, that these things that we normally think of as separate are actually linked. Such things like Mark Twain's father selling the plant and Daniel Boone a generation before collecting it along the Ohio River in what is now Kentucky and shipping it down for passage through West Virginia and connection on to China. We never think of woods in West Virginia as connected to China, but there's a long history of exactly that connection.
Well, I'll tell you, this has got so many fascinating stories in it, including how in 1865 the Minnesota legislature passed an act to preserve and protect the growth of ginseng. And you say in here it was probably the first regulation that restricted American ginseng hunting to a season, which the law said is May 1st to August 1st. There's information about ginseng being grown in Canada. Ginseng poachers, if you can believe that, stealing $5.3 million worth of root from a park. There's just so much in this book. David, what is the website that people can go to if they'd like to get more information?
For more information, people can go to www.divineroot.com. And they will find information both about the book and links to where you can buy it.
The book is Ginseng, the Divine Root, the Curious History of the Plant that Captivated the World. I mean, where else would you find out about Daniel Boone dealing in ginseng and Mark Twain's grandfather being a seller? There's so many wonderful twists and turns that you would never in your wildest dreams imagine about this root that looks like something out of a sci-fi nightmare when you've got a picture of it in front of you because it's got curls and cues and all kinds of things. It really is not pretty looking at all, but
true.
It is a huge industry. In fact, for our nation, it's $44 million. It's the value of annual U.S. ginseng exports. And you have some wonderful information in here. $64,000 was the highest price ever paid for a single root, and that was sold in the late 70s, equal to roughly to $190,000 today. Can you imagine that? All over a root.
Isn't it amazing? It's almost like some valuable Picasso or something coming out of the ground.
Yes, it's incredible. This is an awesome book, Ginseng, the Divine Root. David Taylor, thank you for being my guest.
Thanks so much for having me, Donna.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Well, we're going to be taking a break. This is Donna Siebel with the Hour of Mind Power. And if you'd like to call in just a minute or so, give us a buzz at 877-876-5227. Now, don't forget, if you want to get more information on this Divine Root ginseng, go to www.divineroot.com. And you're going to have all kinds of information there. It's worth researching, and this is a must-have if you are fascinated with herbs and history, etc. Excellent, excellent book. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away. This is the Donna Siebel Show. More good things to come. Hi, this is Donna Siebel. I just received information that due to circumstances beyond our control, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, the Donna Siebel Show and other shows will not be airing on BBS. They will be playing music only. So know that Thursday, Friday, and Monday, we will not be having a program.
Oh, Donna?
Yes?
Yes, that's actually Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Oh, good. Okay,
yes.
Let me clarify that. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. There's not going to be any of the talk show programming. There will be music only played. So we needed to let you know about this as soon as we found out about it so that you can be aware of it, and then the programming will be coming back on Tuesday. So we are going to be rescheduling our guests, and then you also will be aware of this. So just know the shows are not disappearing. We are just not going to be able to broadcast them again this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And you'll be hearing this from other hosts as well. But we will have tomorrow as a guest Mary Getten, and we'll be talking about communicating with orcas. Mary lives in the Pacific Northwest, and her experiences with these magnificent animals are going to be just captivating to you. Also, we are going to be, next week, we'll be talking about how the brain can heal itself. Madonna Siles is going to be my guest. And then we're going to be talking about Kay Faltz's wonderful dog, Lauren. And we're going to be visiting Paris. Yes, we'll be talking about the Paris experiences there. Then George Kohlreiser is going to be my guest, Hostage on the Table. This is a fascinating, fascinating guest. We'll be talking with him in Switzerland. And then Ed Lazo in Tuscany, Italy, we'll be talking with about the Chaos Points. We've got some marvelous, marvelous guests coming up. You're not going to want to miss any of them. And the couple of guests that have been scheduled for Thursday, Friday, and Monday for my show, because I'm on during the week, then we are going to be rescheduling them for the month of September, and I need to let you know about that. So this is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me this afternoon, we have a toll-free number, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. If you want to call in, I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Also, I want to remind you, if you have special stories you want me to know about or you want to share with me, don't hesitate to send me an email. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. I get some of the best stories from those of you that say, gee, I think you might be interested in this, Donna. It's wonderful stuff, and I want you to continue to send. If you have a favorite recipe, I don't care. This show is about personal empowerment. I love to hear from you, and I'll be responding to you as quickly as I can. An email is a good way to get in touch, no matter where you are in the world. And speaking of shared stories, I wanted to share with you a story on World War II. And this was sent to me by Bill. And he said, World War II produced many heroes. One such man was Lieutenant Commander Butch O'Hare. He was a fighter pilot assigned to the aircraft carrier Lexington in the South Pacific. And one day, his entire squadron was sent on a mission. After he was airborne, he looked at his fuel gauge and realized that someone had forgotten to top off his fuel tank. He wasn't going to have enough fuel to complete his mission and get back to his ship. His flight leader told him to return to the carrier. Reluctantly, he dropped out of formation and headed back to the fleet. Now, as he was returning to the mothership, he saw something that turned his blood cold. It was a squadron of Japanese aircraft that were speeding their way towards the American fleet. The American fighters were gone on a sortie, and the fleet was all but defenseless. He couldn't reach his squadron and bring them back in time to save the fleet, nor could he warn the fleet of the approaching danger. There was only one thing for him to do. Somehow, he had to divert them from the fleet. So laying aside all thoughts of personal safety, he dove into the formation of Japanese planes. Wing-mounted 50 calibers blazed as he charged in, attacking one surprised enemy plane and then another. Now, Butch, he kept his activity and action up. He wove in and out of the now broken formation of the Japanese and fired as many planes as he possibly could until all of his ammunition was finally spent. Now, that didn't make him give up. He continued his assault. He dove at the planes, trying to clip a wing or a tail in hopes of damaging as many of the enemy planes as possible and rendering them unfit to fly. The Japanese became exasperated. The Japanese squadron took off in another direction. He was very much relieved when that happened. Butch O'Hare and his tattered fighter limped back to the carrier. Upon landing on the carrier, he reported in and related the events surrounding his return. The film from the gun camera mounted on his plane told the tale of what he had done. It showed the extent of Butch's daring attempt to protect his fleet. He had, in fact, destroyed five enemy aircraft. Now, all of this took place on February 20th, 1942, and for that action, Butch became the Navy's first ace of World War II, and he was the first naval aviator to win the Congressional Medal of Honor. Now, sadly, Butch was killed in aerial combat a year later, and he was only 29 years old. Now, his hometown wouldn't allow the memory of this World War II hero to fade, and today, O'Hare Airport in Chicago is named in tribute to the courage of this wonderful young man. And the statement was made at the end of this wonderful story. The next time you find yourself at O'Hare International, give some thought to visiting Butch's memorial displaying his statue and his Medal of Honor. It's located between Terminals 1 and 2. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. But there's another aspect to this story that I'm going to have to share with you. I don't have time to do it right now, but I will be doing it at another time, perhaps tomorrow. Donna Sebo here. I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Give me a call at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Oh, I've got to remind you, you don't want to forget about the Washington State Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is the last weekend. Now, this is being held out at the Mentor Creek Ranch. I know we've got listeners all over the country, and people are coming in from outside the country to attend this wonderful event because it is so much fun. Those of us that are vendors that are there participating, we have hundreds of volunteers that participate in this, and we have tens of thousands of people that come out each weekend. And this is the third weekend. This is the final weekend of this wonderful, wonderful event. And it's again at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Grig Harbor, Washington. And if you would like to be able to get your tickets online and save money at the same time in doing it, you won't have to stand in the long lines that are there starting early a.m. Believe me, people get there early because they want to get a parking spot and they want to be able to enjoy the fair and be there all day. All you have to do is go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. This is such a marvelous event. It's a family activity. Bring the kids. People even bring their dogs. Just remember, the dogs have to be on a harness so that they are controllable. You just can't let them roam wildly. But we just love the animals. We have all kinds of people there in costume. You'll see the Queen's Court. And because it's a fantasy, a Renaissance fantasy fair, you see some of the most whimsical outfits. And you have craftsmen in the 16th century village environment that are doing special things that were done at that time. It's great for the kids. Their eyes get as big as saucers when they see the knights walking by in their armor. And, oh, it's just wonderful. Delicious food, wonderful people. It is a great way to spend a weekend. So don't forget, go to the WashingtonRenFair.com website. Don't forget to put the E on the end of the word fair. And don't miss this wonderful event. You'll save money, time, and just have those tickets right in hand. You won't have to stand in line for anything. We'd love to see you there. This is the last weekend, so don't miss it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. I wanted to share a thought with you, and it's by Charles Handy. He's a management consultant and writer. I liked his words. I thought they were appropriate for today. The moment will arrive when you are comfortable with who you are and what you are, bald or old, fat or poor, successful or struggling, when you don't feel the need to apologize for anything or to deny anything. To be comfortable in your own skin is the beginning of strength. To be comfortable in your own skin is the beginning of strength. Wow. I think when we can appreciate ourselves as individuals and like the uniqueness of who we are so far ahead of the crowds of life. So many people are so concerned about mimicking someone else or trying to fit into an established box, if you will, of someone else's preconceived ideas. It hasn't worked in the past, and it's not working any better today. It will not work any better even in the future. Have you ever been around people that either because you dress differently or you opt to be an individual, you were considered a threat You were considered someone that should not be associated with because you were different. I know that that was something that plagued me for a great deal of my life. And so often I felt like I had to fit in. I had to compromise. Well, I'm so delighted to be where I am in life that I can enjoy my uniqueness and enjoy the fact that I am who I am and that it's okay and that other people can be who they are. And my goodness, isn't that wonderful? Because if nothing else, it gives you something to talk about. How boring and dull it would be if we all looked and acted just like everybody else. That is terribly uninteresting, I think. But we still have people today that want us to all look the same, act the same, and follow a particular goose-step patterning that they deem is the best way to do things. Don't ever be afraid of your own individuality. And remember something in becoming your own person. Keep a few words in mind. Do no harm. Just as you appreciate being appreciated as an individual, you want to give that same kind of respect and right to other people as well. And when you do that, my goodness, this world becomes a much richer place. I think it's wonderful that we're all so very unique and so very different. As I said, it gives us something to chat about. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. I want to remind you, we have just learned that there will be no Donna Sebo show on Thursday, Friday, or Monday, but we're coming back on Tuesday, but you will be hearing music on BBS Radio. Also, know that the programs that are scheduled for Saturday and Sunday are also not going to be aired. So, totally on BBS Radio, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, there will not be any talk show programming live. We'll be back with you on Tuesday. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break. Don't you go away now. We're going to be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I want to remind you that we are going to be having our last weekend of the Washington State Renaissance Fantasy Fair. So don't forget to go to the WashingtonRenFair.com website where you're going to be able to get your tickets and be able to save money, too, and that will enable you to get discounts for family or groups that are coming in. And it is so exciting when you're able to step into a different world, a different time. And again, that is going to be this Saturday and Sunday. And, of course, it's in Gig Harbor, Washington, and it is right there at 10215 SR 302 in Gig Harbor, Washington. And again, this is the 19th and 20th, the last weekend of this show. We are having record-breaking crowds come out, and it's so exciting to meet and interact with you. And you know, I'm going to be there also in costume, and you can come to my display area. We have a canopy, and also you'll know where I am because you'll see these bright golden yellow banners. They're huge with giant red lions on them. That's the crest I use for the Renaissance Fantasy Fair. And you'll not only see my booth, but you'll see vendors that have products from all over the world. Everything relates to that particular time period, and it's so much fun. And you know, you can wear costumes into this event as well. Or if you don't have a costume, boy, we have people that can supply you with one. You can dress as a peasant, or you can dress as a king. It doesn't make any difference, or a queen. And there's also outfits for children. So there's just a lot of fun to be had here. Just come on out, plan for the whole day. The hours are from 10 to 6, and it is so much fun. And the weather is going to be just fabulous, so you can come on out. The food's delicious. Everybody has such a wonderful, wonderful time at the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open if you wanted to give me a call. Telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Wanted to share a little bit of trivia with you that I thought was something, and it is real stuff. It's not make-believe. There is information about one of our patriots, Patrick Henry. You remember what he said, give me liberty or give me death? Well, this gentleman left a will when he passed away that left his estate to his wife as long as she didn't take the liberty of remarrying after his death. Why did he put this in his will? He said, it would make me unhappy to feel I've worked all my life to support another man's wife. Oh, don't you just love that? He's not around, so who cares? But anyhow, she decided she didn't want the money that badly, so she gave up the money and she got married to somebody that she fell in love with. Also, another bit of world history. In 1893, New Zealand became the first country to allow women to vote in national elections. 90,000 women showed up for the big event that year. What a milestone. And in New Zealand, you would never have thought that that would have been the first place in the world to allow women to vote on the national level. And do you know what? This one really made me laugh. I don't know why this was even given as a fact of trivia. Anthropologists believe that it was only about 8,000 years ago that humans realized that men had anything to do with starting pregnancies. I'm sorry. I can't believe anybody was that dumb. I don't know how they come up with these things. Because we don't have any people surviving from 8,000 years ago, but I have this funny feeling that they had figured it out somewhere along the line. Anyway, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Now, I have a wonderful fudge-covered no-bake cheesecake. And if you're like me, your sweet tooth grabs you every once in a while, and you try to discipline yourself, but boy, it just is so good when you can dig into something deliciously delectable like a cheesecake. It's one of my favorite desserts. Well, I've got a recipe here that'll cut down the calories and cut out the fat and leave the flavor. So let me share this with you. You know, a normal classic cheesecake recipe is 592 calories of fat, calories here, 36 grams of fat, in fact. And this lightened up version is only 276 calories with 12 grams of fat. Here's how it goes. You're going to need one envelope, a quarter of an ounce of unflavored gelatin, 20 reduced fat Oreo cookies, and you want to grind those up really fine. Nuke those in your Cuisinart. 3 packages, 8 ounces each, of Muscatel cream cheese at room temperature. 3 packages, 8 ounces each at room temperature. 1 can of fat-free condensed sweetened milk. 1 can, 14 ounces of fat-free sweetened condensed milk. 2 cups of frozen fat-free whipped topping. You want that thawed. And then you need a half a cup of light hot fudge topping warmed. And here was what all you have to do. You sprinkle your gelatin on a quarter of a cup of water. Let it stand until it's softened, about 5 minutes. Then you want to microwave it on high in 10-second intervals, stirring often until smooth and dissolved. Coat an 8-inch springform pan with cooking spray. Stir 2 tablespoons of water into your Oreo cookie crumbs. Press them onto the bottom of the pan. At a medium speed, you beat your cream cheese and milk until fluffy, 2 to 3 minutes. Gradually beat in the gelatin mixture, and then fold in your whipped topping. And you spread it over the crust. And you need to refrigerate it at least 8 hours or overnight. And when you're ready to serve it, run the knife around the edge of the cake to loosen. Remove the sides of the pan. And then take your fudge topping and spread it over the top of the cheesecake. And let it stand for about 30 minutes before you start cutting into it before serving. And that is a real delicious recipe that's not going to have as many calories, but, oh, it'll make your taste buds so happy. This is Donna Sebo reminding you that on Thursday, Friday, and Monday, the Donna Sebo Show will not be heard, music will be played, and BBS Radio will not have any live programming from Thursday through Monday, including Saturday and Sunday. Music will be played. This is to notify you of that. Remember, all of you, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And know that you're the one that steers the rudder of your life. And nobody else is responsible for that but you. And you can go the direction you want to go. Take care. Talk with you tomorrow. God bless. And tomorrow we talk about orcas. You're not going to want to miss this. It is absolutely awesome. And don't forget our archive shows. You can go in and listen to those too. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back with you bright and sassy tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.